floor apartments and then smashing out through a back window, things did not look good. There didn't seem to be anyone to hear the gunshots, even if they could over the gushes of water, and the gunman wouldn't have to wait long for us to either begin to stiffen up under the cold water or float in the lake forming in the complex's courtyard. I was about to damn myself and dash to the archway for help when a man's voice called out to me from the upper floor. "Mr. McGinnis?" I rolled my eyes at the "really?" face Bobby gave me. I wasn't surprised the guy knew who I was. Chances are we were on the same road map, circling around Gyeongsi's offspring. Thing was, he and I had totally different reasons for doing so. He wanted them dead, and I took offense to that. Sticking my head out a little bit, I shouted back, "Yeah? What can I do for you?" Scintillating conversation at its best, but there wasn't much else to say, short of begging him to let us go. Considering he'd just spent the last minute or so trying to blow our heads off, I didn't think it was going to be an option. "You know I'm going to have to kill you and your friend." He sounded almost delighted, a flippant slant to his voice. Like Jay, he had a smooth roundness to his English. I didn't recognize his voice, but he sounded vaguely familiar. "You might as well come out and get it over with." "Dude, I don't even know who you are." If anything, the water got colder. Either that or my core body temperature was beginning to drop. I'd lost feeling in my toes, and from the blue splotches creeping into Bobby's lips, he wasn't doing much better. "Really? I would have thought you'd figured it out." A shadow emerged from the stairwell. The light hit him, and I saw Bobby frown, struggling to put a name to the face. I had no such problem. Even distracted by the Beretta he held pointed at my head, I recognized him straight off. I'd really only seen him twice. Once when he'd picked his mother up at my office, and when he'd been in the conference room after Vivian's death. He'd mastered the dutiful son look then, in his dress slacks and polo shirts. Now he was working on the serial killer, and doing a damn fine job of it. Even as shitty a dresser as I was, I knew green khakis did not go with an orange Hawaiian shirt. James Bunn. Fuck. He'd seemed like a decent kind of guy. It had all been an act put on for his mother, an act that probably also included him being the loving older brother to his wayward illegitimate sister, Vivian Na. Bobby ducked back behind his cover, but not before he gave me a "who the fuck" look. "Madam Sun's son, right?" "Good to know that for some of you we don't all look alike," he sneered at me. I scuttled around the trunk, carefully aligning myself so he couldn't get a clear shot. "Pretty fucking shitty thing to say there, James." The numbness was eating away at my feet, and my fingers joined the party, tingling when I flexed them. "Kind of racist, actually, especially, you know, since I'm half Japanese. What do you want to let us go?"
"Let you go? I can't do that, Mr. McGinnis."
I heard him shuffling in between the shots of sprinkler sprays and strained to figure out if he went left or right without getting my head blown off.
"Or should I call you Cole?"
Whatever makes you happy." I caught a glimpse of Bobby's shoulder emerging out from behind the eucalyptus. Shaking, he came into view, curled up onto his haunches and balancing on his toes. He motioned toward the next tree, pointed to himself, and then to the tree. I shook my head, hoping to keep him in place, but Bobby frowned furiously, negating my concern. I took a deep breath and shouted at James, hoping to keep his attention on me.
"What are you doing here, you know, besides trying to kill me?"
Bobby took off before James could answer, and suddenly the bushes around Bobby were peppered with two shots. I heard Bobby's pained grunt and toppled over, trying to sprint toward him. My legs weren't responding, and I shook from the cold. The sunlight coming through the trees wasn't hot enough to warm us up, and I was struggling to get some feeling in my limbs when Bobby rolled under a stand of thick hibiscus bushes, their yellow pollen dusted over his short hair. He was clutching his left arm, and a trickle of blood seeped out from between his fingers, soaking into the cedar mulch chunks around the stand's roots. Making eye contact, Bobby mouthed at me, "I'm okay." Nodding in return, I went back to shouting at James. Let me guess, you're here to kill Terry Yee?
Smart man!
His laugh was loud, telling me he was closer than I would have liked.
You're not as stupid as you look. I thought I'd kill his mother, too, since I'm here. You, on the other hand, are becoming a problem I sorely need to get rid of. And now your friend, too. Such a shame, especially after everything you've done for Mother.
Cursing the water spray, leeching the warmth out of my body, I dug around the tree, hoping to find a rock or something to throw at his head. So, do you want to give me the 5-minute evil villain monologue, or should I just guess? It has something to do with Gyeong-si and your mother.
Gung Jung Gyeong-si? That bastard?
Any calm in James's voice melted away under the heat of his furious reply.
For a gay man, he's ruined a lot of lives by sleeping with women he should have left alone to begin with.
Across from me, Bobby smirked and jerked his head toward the archway again. I snarled a silent no at him and cut my stiff hand down, telling him to stay put. If James had a clear shot, he'd probably take it, killing us both if he could. The water spray arched toward me again, and I ducked before tossing another question at James.
Why now? If you're so pissed off at him, why not just kill him? Why go after innocent people like your sister?
Vivian? She was never my sister. My mother gave her everything, a family back home, money and education, and what did she become? The whore. She was so much of a slut she fucked her own brother.
James's fury escalated, and he sounded like he was popping a vein.
It was never enough for her. Why didn't she go to that faggot father of hers for money? It was bad enough she ruined my family in Korea. She had to come here and get between me and my mother.
So you went after Gyeong-si's kids? It was a stretch of the imagination by anyone's logic. Claudia told me once, sometimes it doesn't pay to argue with crazy, but in this case I needed to argue. Anything to buy us time to distract him.
That doesn't make any sense. It would have been too easy if I just killed the whore. Gyeong-si deserves more than that.
Another loud crunch of mulch sounded next to me, and Bobby's grimace deepened. Holding his hands a few feet apart, he tried to tell me how far away James was to my hiding place, then pantomimed jumping up with his closed fists. I nodded, hoping Bobby was telling me James was hopscotching around the courtyard, probably to avoid stepping directly into the punishing blasts of the high-powered sprinklers.
I wanted him to know what it's like for his family, every damned child he's ever made to be taken from him, just like what he did to us back in Korea. My father left us because of him. And don't worry, I'll deal with Gyeong-si last.
I didn't know if that meant he'd already killed Terry Yee or still had the kid on his hit list. Even if Terry were dead, there were still Abby and Hung Cho. Bobby and I needed to get out of there and take James down with us. A thin river of blood ran down Bobby's arm, and he'd begun to shiver uncontrollably. Huffing to control his breathing, he turned over onto his side, tucking himself farther under the bush to get away from the sprinkler heads pointing straight at him. The water was pooling up around my feet, and small bits of foamy mulch were floating around the sides of my Doc Martens. My boots. They were black leather and hefty, meant to take a pounding. I'd worn them while doing the renovations to the house, and they'd shrugged off hammers and power tools being dropped on them. Once, after a 2-mile hard run to chase down a runaway I'd been hired to find, I actually took them off because it was easier to walk without their weight. Steel-toed and thick-soled, they were heavy as shit. They were gonna have to do. I quickly yanked them off, then hastily pulled at the shoestrings until I had enough hanging to knot them together. Using the tree trunk for cover, I crept up to my feet and called out to James.
Tell you what, how about if we talk about this?
I looked at Bobby and pointed behind me, hoping he could tell me where James was. The tips of his fingers were nearly bleached white, and the beds of his nails were a sickly blue. A smear of blood covered his hand, and a trickle of red ran down his wrist toward the elbow. He was bleeding too much for a flesh wound, and his arm shook when he held up two fingers, then made an L before pointing behind me.
"Why don't you come out so I can shoot you?"
James's sneer leaked through his voice.
"I'm pretty sure I've already killed your friend."
"Like you killed Darren Shim?"
I could sneer back with the best of them.
Nice how you killed him so no one could trace Vivian's shooting back to you.
That asshole came to her office. I had to get rid of him. He was going to hurt her.
It was easy to put together. Now I had the missing piece. He'd probably run into Shim when Hong Chul was around. From what little I knew about Shim, he'd gladly have done some dirty work for cash. I wasn't going to waste any tears crying over a man who shot up a cafe and killed a defenseless woman. But he probably hadn't known he was walking into his own death trap. If James hadn't bashed Jim's head in then, he still would have killed his hired gun later to cover his tracks. I wasn't graceful. Other guys brag about how they pounce on a guy during a fight and they make it sound like a ballet. The only ballet I've ever been accused of doing was Dance of the Hours, and I was a pink tutu-wearing hippo named Hyacinth. Still, at least I had some element of surprise when I stumbled out of my hiding place, swinging my jury-rigged nunchucks. One caught James across the throat and slapped the back of his head. He pitched forward, nearly doing a faceplant into the mulch. He grabbed a handful of the bark chips and flung them at my face, trying to blind me. They were too wet to do much more than fall a few inches from his outstretched arm, but James unknowingly gave me an opening. I didn't spend time in the boxing ring with Bobby for exercise. Since the only person I'd ever gotten into a real fist fight with had been my brother Mike, I had thought it would be good to learn how to actually punch. Jojo was a good teacher, Bobby was a good opponent, and the various men who'd ducked under the ropes to go a few rounds with me never gave me any quarter, so I felt pretty confident that I could hit, and hit hard. After rearing back my arm, I laid one out, planting my curled fist into the middle of James's face. He reeled back, his head bouncing on his neck like a loose bobble, and I got a satisfying crunching noise and a fountain of blood streaming out of his nose. He also dropped the gun. I wasn't going to waste time going for the Beretta. I didn't know where it landed, and James was standing right in front of me. Kicking up as much mulch with my feet as I could to hide its whereabouts, I moved in, intent on doing some damage with my bare fists. With more than a few inches and about 40 pounds on the guy, it wasn't going to be much of a fair fight, unless he had some martial arts moves I didn't know about. From the way he threw his arms up to protect the top of his head, I was safe. The trick to hitting someone effectively is putting weight behind each punch and having a good, firm stance. My problem was, I couldn't really feel my feet, and my arms were deadened from the icy water. I was slower than I'd have liked, and the mulch slipped around underneath me. The fight was still more mine to lose, but I was going to have to work for it. James swung at my head, an open-palm slap I normally would have avoided easily, if I wasn't frozen down to the marrow of my bones. The smack of skin against skin was something I preferred to have happen in the bedroom, and only with a naked, sweaty J-Men. James's ill-aimed cuff brought me no pleasure, only a ringing sound when his cupped palm forced a burst of chilled air into my ear canal. The rush of pressure against my eardrum hurt more than the slap, and I bit back a grunt of pain. James floundered, losing his footing. He made a grab for something to steady himself, then screamed when the palm's serrated trunk dug into his hand. It wasn't the best distraction, but I was going to make the most of it. I tackled James at the knees, wrapping my arms up and around his midsection. We went down into a bunch of shrubs, shaking out a shower of tiny purple flowers. He fought me, punching at my shoulders to get free. Hooking my legs around his thighs, I heaved up and drew back, blocking one of his flails with my arm. He struck at me a few more times before I found an opening I could take. That's when I broke his nose again, driving as many bone shards up into his sinuses as I could. Concentrating on his face, I hammered at James's cheekbones and jaw. His nails scored lines into my neck during one of the passes, and the cold air bit into my now burning skin, leaving a painful sting. The blood on James's face splattered, then ran when a blast of water hit us from one of the churning sprinkler heads. The spray caught me unawares, tearing into my mouth. It tasted nasty, and with a suspicious iron metallic aftertaste that had me wondering if I'd torn my lip. I spat out the foul water and James struck back, delivering a soft punch to my side. I would have laughed off the strike, but when he punched again, a searing pain erupted across my ribs, and I caught a flash of glittering metal in his hand. He must have had the knife in his pocket. Only a few inches long, it was a wide, strong steel, easily cutting through my soaked shirt and into my side. Grinning up at me with a maniacal smirk, he dug his elbow into the ground and twisted the blade, catching its tip on my ribs. The pain was intense, and I doubled over, nearly puking from the ache coiling around my abdomen. I rolled off, taking the blade with me. Clutching at the hilt, I was trying to pull it free, when I heard a gun blast echo through the courtyard. Tensed, I curled up onto myself, quickly working through the numbness and pains I already had. A moment later, Bobby's hand yanked my sliced shirt up and pressed against the deep, bleeding cut on my side. A few feet away, James Bond lay still and pale. There was no mistaking the stippling of gunpowder on his skin. At some point during our fight, Bobby had found the gun and fired it, nearly point-blank, into James's neck.
Is he dead?
I coughed, and my wound leaked, the flaps of skin gulping like a dying goldfish.
Don't know,
Bobby grunted at me, pressing harder on the cut.
Don't care. Now shut up, I've got to get you to stop bleeding.
To tell the truth, he didn't look much better than James. The cold had set its hooks in deep, and I was pretty sure we'd lose a toe or two from frostbite. Bobby hooked his arm under me and dragged me out of the landscaping, not stopping until we were in the relative safety of the dry stairwell. He gripped my shoulders and stared me down.
What the fuck is it with you and crazies? It's like you're not happy unless someone insane is chasing you down.
He wrung out his shirt as much as he could and used it to staunch my wound. The hit he'd taken from James's gun looked as if it had taken a chunk of meat from his arm, and it began to bleed freely now that we were out of the deluge.
You think you can stay out of trouble long enough for me to go to my phone and call 911?
Out of trouble? Sure. I grinned at him, probably looking stupid from the pain.
Oh, hey, one good thing.
What the fuck could be good about this?
Bobby growled, grabbed my hand and put it firmly on the damp shirt to hold it in place.
You tell me, princess, what the fucking hell can be good about this shit?
Pointing at the knife wound in my side, I replied,
hey, at least I didn't get shot this time.
Chapter 22. By the end of the next afternoon, I was sucking down handfuls of ibuprofen and wishing I'd taken the doctor's offer of painkillers. Hearing me hiss in anguish for the 20th time that day, Claudia gave me the evil eye over her granny glasses and pursed her mouth.
You're going to kill your liver there, boy.
Mo looked up at her, and she shooed him back to his studying.
No, not you, the idiot over there.
I'm fine. Really,
I lied. It ached a little bit, but I wasn't going to let the slight pain bother me. Or so I told my manly self. The knife went in a bit sideways, and other than a bone nick and minor muscle damage, it was mostly okay. I'd had worse. Hell, I'd have taken worse if it meant Bobby escaped unscathed, but I didn't, and he hadn't. From the way he'd bitched at the emergency room when they began poking him with a local sedative, someone would have thought he'd been gutted by a Tyrannosaurus Rex instead of getting a 9-mil slug in the meat of his upper arm. 3 hours of his complaining, and when the doctor, announcing the inevitable overnight stay to watch his vitals, turned it into a full-blown typhoon of rage, I played the coward and let Claudia take a verbal strap to his ass. Besides, I smirked back at her, rocking back in my office chair, why do you keep coming in when the doctor told you not to? You got shot, you know.
Boy?
Claudia inhaled hard, and I braced myself. Mo stepped in to save my ass, once more reminding me that one did not poke a simmering dragon with a look that clearly assessed me for mental stability and found me wanting.
Nana, it's time to go. We've got to get going if we're going to make dinner at Uncle Mace's.
His backpack was already bulging with electronics and books. She huffed, and I slipped him a 20, mouthing a thank you behind Claudia's broad back. He palmed it like a pro, tucking it into his jeans pocket while I handed Claudia her cane, then dodged when she tried to hit me with it.
Ha!
I almost stuck my tongue out, but she caught me with her backswing, smacking my calf.
Ah, shit! Don't think I can't beat you down, Cole McGinnis.
Claudia shook her cane at my nose.
Mo, help me down the stairs before I stay here and knock some sense into this man.
Detective Dexter Wong was climbing the steps when I opened the door for Claudia. He was sporting a new haircut, shorn nearly down to his scalp on the sides with a poof of chunky spikes on top. It looked a little silly on him, but by the way he strutted up the stairs and gave Claudia a jaunty wave, I figured I couldn't really give him shit about it. The gray polyester jacket, however, was fair game. Man, you are dressed like a bad 70s cop. I followed him back into the office, dogging his steps. Come on, where'd you hide the Gran Torino? Fuck you, McGinnis. His rejoinder lacked bite, especially compared to Claudia's skilled cuts, but I wasn't going to point that out either. Sit down. I'm here to figure out what the hell you did yesterday. I got Wong a soda from the fridge and handed it to him over the desk. Slumping down into my chair, I popped open my Diet Coke and sipped at the froth bubbling up over the tab. What's there to say that you didn't hear last night at the hospital? You were in the ER for what, 5 minutes before Jay dragged you out of there? How much could I ask you? I wasn't even that hurt. He was happy to see me whole and hearty, very happy. He even showed me how happy he was in the parking lot.
I didn't need that image in my head, he moaned.
Also, I'm hiding from O'Byrne. She thinks I let you run all over this case and didn't do anything to stop you. You didn't. A staple remover came flying at my shoulder, but it went wide, clattered across the floor, and came to rest against the far wall. She wasn't too happy to see me when I stopped into the hospital to see Hung Chul.
Yeah, unhappy is an understatement, Wong sighed. James Bond didn't make it, you know. He was alive long enough to talk a bit to his mother and the cops, but seized up on the table. They couldn't resuscitate.
Sort of figured that out on the scene. Bobby got him close range. I'd seen too much bloodshed over the past week. Vivian's death would haunt me, but I'd sleep better at night knowing James was dead.
Madam Sun's packing up shop and heading back to Seoul. Guess Gyeongsi's going to corner the market on fortune-telling around here.
She's lost her daughter and her son. Do you blame her?
I'd liked the Ajuma. She seemed like a nice woman who'd been dealt a shitty hand in life. No, it's a pity, though. Bad enough her daughter was murdered, but to have her son be the killer?
He shook his head, the spikes on his head bobbing in waves.
Thinking of Kim Hyun-sik, I'd said. I've seen it the other way around, too. It sucks either way. Did James say anything about killing Shim?
Yeah, I got to the ER when they were prepping him. He spilled his guts to his mother. Guess he knew he wasn't going to make it. Amazing how many people find God when they're knocking on Hell's Gate.
Wong rested his elbow on his knees, gesturing to the soda can.
Shim popped Choi in their car and was waiting for Lee at her apartment. James paid him $5,000 each for those hits. Vivian called him because she was going to be late for a dinner they were supposed to go to, so James knew where she was going to be and figured he'd take the chance to take her out.
With not a damn thought about what it would do to his mother?
Nope. When she told him she was going to be at that coffee shop, James drove and parked his car on the street outside the window. Since the entrance to the place is inside the courtyard, he figured no one would connect his vehicle to what was going on. Shim met him there, sat in the passenger seat, and waited for a clear shot, and then they took off into traffic when the shit hit the fan.
Shim didn't wait for a clear shot. He lit the fucking place up, reminded Wong. It was like Elmer Fudd at a bunny ranch.
Darren Shim was not known for being a stable young man, Wong drawled. Or for being very patient. James apparently didn't have the money on him, so Shim decided he'd go collect it in person. James denied telling Shim to come to Madame Sun's place of business the next day. I guess Shim decided he was going to show James he was dealing with a badass and collect what was owed him.
So James bashing his head in with the urn to protect his mother was real? If I sounded skeptical, Wong's expression bordered on intense cynicism. Really?
That's what James told his mother, Wong replied slowly. She seemed happy to hear her son wasn't a total bastard. It might have gone down the way he said. The attack on Madame Sun wasn't planned. Shim did it on his own. James killed him defending his mother.
Maybe, I conceded. He had a deep hate for Gyeongsi. Blamed the man for his parents' divorce.
I guess when Vivian showed up out of the blue, it pissed him off. His mother was bending over backward for the daughter. When Vivian wasn't appreciative enough, James was done. He did say killing Gyeong-si was the ultimate goal. Hurting Gyeong-si by killing off his kids was just a bonus. We're guessing Hong-chul's grandfather, Bak Bong-chul, told James all about Gyeong-si's children. He must have let his own hatred of Gyeong-si slip out when he was having a consultation, and James pounced on it. I had turned over Bak's papers late last night, along with the notes we'd taken from them, but most of it was nonsensical. No word on if James had something to do with the grandfather's death. He was cremated, so there's nothing to run talks on, Wong supplied. Captain said to let that one sit, not worth pursuing. Well, not without causing the family a lot of unnecessary pain.
Yeah, probably best. Some of his notes were kind of crazy.
His daughter said Buck was suffering from some sort of dementia. I'm surprised you guys got anything out of what he wrote down. Good job working it out, though, even though it almost got you killed.
He made a face, mostly apologetic, but I wouldn't put money on it.
Bobby doing good?
Yeah, I picked him up this morning. Half of the guys in his little black book are fighting over each other to take care of him. Sipping my drink, I snorted out at the carbonation tickling my nose. Right now his apartment probably looks like a no-cover-charged twink night at the slip-and-slide.
Got word Abby Park's going to be okay. Her liver's responding to whatever meds they put her on.
Wong made a show of flipping through his notebook, crossing things off with a pen he'd stolen from Claudia's desk.
And I got hold of the Yees. The mother apparently broke her tooth on something, and Terry took her to the dentist. That's why they weren't around when James showed up.
Good. Honestly, I went over there to see if she knew anyone who hated Gyeong-si. I was hoping for a lead.
She's a trip, he chuckled. She's the one who told Terry to get a job with Gyeong-si. Thought it would be a good way for him to get to know his father. Of course, she didn't really believe Gyeong-si was gay. First thing she asked Terry when she found out was if Gyeong-si hit on him.
Oh, God, don't go there. I shuddered. Terry's a good kid. Wonder if he and Hong-chul are going to get together now that they know that they're brothers.
Don't know. It'll be nice for them. Brothers are good to have.
Even knowing Mike as well as I did, I'd want to have him around. Ichiro was easier to like, but we were still in the honeymoon stage of sorts. Or maybe it was just easier to get along with someone if you were too old to fight over the toy from a box of cereal. Yeah, they're good to have. Nodding in agreement, I gave the chair a few squeaks. Although mine seems not to be as good at reading because he got Lee confused with Yi.
Was it in English or Korean, the writing?
The writing? Probably both. The guy really had shitty writing, so I've got to cut Ichi some slack. So what now? O'Byrne going to nail me for impeding an investigation? I wouldn't have put it past her. The last time I saw her, she was measuring my head to hang above her desk at the station.
Yeah, Captain's not too happy with either of us. If I'm lucky, I'll get a bright, shiny patrol car to tool around in while I'm giving out parking tickets. We'll see.
Wong sighed mournfully.
Okay, I've got to get home to the girlfriend. We're supposed to go out to dinner with my parents. My mom's already hinting about grandkids. I think I'm going to tell her we're going to have to get a dog and see if we can't keep it alive first. Then I'll think about having kids.
I walked Wong out after locking the office up. Someone in the neighborhood was prepping for the cooler weather from the sounds of wood being split nearby. Rubbing at my injured side, I gave myself permission to be lazy and order in a few stacks of seasoned eucalyptus. Seeing the white Explorer parked beside my Rover made me smile, and I forgot all about my aches and pains. Jay was waiting for me on the stoop, sitting on the cold cement and smoking a Kretek. The aromatic clove smell drifted toward me, greeting my approach with a fragrant kiss. He dug through my clothes again, unearthing a dark green fisherman sweater Maddie'd brought back for me from Killebegs. Jay swam in it, and he'd pulled down its hem until it covered his knees, probably hoping it would keep his legs warmer than his torn jeans could. A box of groceries sat on the cement behind him, the end of a large butternut squash and a bunch of leeks peeking out over the top. Hey, that co-op thing you joined dropped stuff off? He didn't look up. Instead, his eyes were fixed off into the distance.
not even focused on the popsicle stick-slat fence separating my long lot from the neighbor's. I leaned over to kiss him and got a chunk of hair instead of the mouth I'd been aiming for. Jay? You okay? Babe? I got no response, so I tried again. Jay?
Where's Tiffany? Do you know? She's not answering her phone.
He turned his face toward me, but his eyes were still unfocused. Pinned to anywhere but my face, it was a dead look, as if something inside of him was withering away in front of me.
I thought she was here with you.
Maddie took her and Sissy for a girls' afternoon. She was supposed to tell you, from what I heard, they're buying up L.A. I touched his cheek, finding it chilled from the wind. It stung when he flinched, but when Jay leaned into the cup of my palm, I sighed in silent relief. Talk to me, honey.
They're moving here. To Los Angeles. I told you, ne? My mother and Jesu.
He sounded worse than numb, his lips barely moving as he spoke.
I guess Ri, too, I don't know. She... Fuck, Koa, I don't know.
Yeah, you told me. I sat down next to him. He looked too brittle to touch, but I slung my arm around his waist. Did your mom call to tell you when?
No. She called to tell me I'm no longer her son.
He broke in front of me, his control shattering under the weight of the words. I tried to pull him closer, confused and unsure about what to do, but Jay pulled away, keeping a bit of distance between us.
Koa, she knows. She really does know this time. She...
Any pain I'd ever experienced, even grabbing at Rick in those final moments between us, didn't hurt as much as seeing Jay crumble. Whatever he had going on inside of him was devastating. An emotional massacre he didn't have a chance in hell of surviving. Babe, I need you to talk to me. I scooted closer, pressing tight against him. What happened? What the fuck happened? Did Tiff talk to her? I thought she was cool with us. She said she was going to be okay with us.
My aunt, Hyunshik's mother, called her. She told my mother everything. That she'd found me with Hyung, having sex with him, and that I'd been at Dorothy Kasu. Everything, Koa, including us.
Jay's chest hitched, a sob caught somewhere in his throat.
All because my mother is coming to Los Angeles with Jesu, because Uncle wants his son. My aunt had to hurt her, hurt me.
Your aunt? Told her? There weren't enough foul words I could come up with. Rage filled every crevice of my being and spilled out through my mouth. Fucking bitch. Why? Why the hell would she do that to you? You bent over backwards for her. You did everything you could for that.
She was jealous. Is jealous.
Jay finally looked at me, and I recoiled at the pain in his face. He was laid bare in front of me, carved up and left for dead by the woman who'd given birth to him.
So she told my mother I'm like this. How I whored myself, letting men fuck me, and that's how I was supporting the family. My selling my ass to men like Hyunshik or to you. My aunt destroyed me. My family.
Because she's a fucking bitch, I whispered, reaching for Jay's shoulders to fold him into a hug. He didn't fight me, collapsing into my arms. Shaking, he began to cry, a noiseless weeping strong enough to send shockwaves through his body. Rocking him, I stroked at his hair and kissed the top of his head. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere.
I can't feel inside of me anymore, Cole.
He sounded scared, more terrified than I'd ever heard him sound before. Even in the grip of the bloodshed and death we'd slogged through, Jay had been stoic, practically phlegmatic in enduring his troubles. Suddenly the shell was cracked, and a little boy with a broken heart poured out in a slithering, yolky mess.
I can't feel my heart anymore. It just hurts too much to breathe.
What did she tell you? Your mom? I didn't even know the woman's name. He'd never told it to me. Right now it didn't seem as important as what she meant to him. Maybe you didn't hear her straight. Maybe she just needs time.
No, she's done with me. She said that she'd always known I was wrong, but she didn't care because I wasn't there living with her anymore, so it didn't matter. I didn't matter anymore.
He was tiring. Too much energy spent on too little. And a bitch seemed to have sucked everything out of him. Bruised circles puffed up the skin beneath Jay's drooping eyes, and he sighed, unable to hold himself up anymore.
I was nothing to her. Nothing more than someone to feed off of. I thought I wanted it to be different. I wanted her to love me. She is my mother.
You have me. And Scarlet. Hell, Jay, you've got so many people around you.
But they're not family,
he insisted softly.
Not my family. She's going to take Tiffany. I don't know if I'll ever see her. Ori, again. I can't let her take my sisters from me, Koa. She doesn't care for them, forgets them, and does things with men. I can't let my sisters live like that. Like I did when I was their age. It kills you inside. You're so alone, Koa. I don't want them to be that alone.
We're your family, Jay. I'll be your family. I didn't know what else to say. Trapped in the sticky threads of Jay's pain, I could only hold him tighter and rock him as he cried. And you're not nothing, babe. You are everything.
Don't leave me, Cole.
His arms tightened around my stomach, thrusting sharp tingles through the bandaged knife wounds along my ribs.
You promised if I told you never to let me go, you'd be here.
Hey, I'm here, aren't I? I reminded him. Sliding my hand under his chin, I tilted his head up until I could see his face. I'm not going anywhere, Kim Jae-min. Promise to God, whatever it takes, wherever you go, I'm there.
Augie?
Jay didn't cry pretty. His nose was red, but he was pretty. Beautiful in every way that mattered, especially when he bent his head down to kiss my fingertips. Yeah, Jay, I murmured, stroking his lower lip with my thumb.
Sarange, Jagya.
He took a deep breath and whispered something I'd wanted to hear him say for a very long time.
I love you.
The day was just beginning to kiss dusk when Jay began to shiver violently in my arms. I'd sat and held him close for nearly an hour and a half, letting him cry himself out at first before spending a long time kissing him better. I didn't want anything more from him than his mouth and body against mine, stroking his heart back open after it had been stabbed through by his mother's rejection. We had talked some, coming to the conclusion that we were both freezing our asses off and that the world would look a whole hell of a lot better if we had some food and alcohol in us. I reluctantly let him go and picked up the produce box. The leeks tickled my nose, so I pushed them aside. Jay moved stiffly, his legs probably frozen from squatting on the cold cement.
Let go. You're injured, remember? Go unlock the door.
Jay sniffed with shuddering hiccups as he wrestled the box from me.
I want to talk about something besides me, Is Terry and his mom okay? No one knew where they were, ne?
Yeah, he'd gone to take her to the dentist. She broke a tooth on something. It's why he lit out of Gyeongsi's, so they missed the whole thing. I snatched an escape apple from the box as it rolled around near a bunch of celery. Wong says Abby's doing well, too.
Did you talk to Bobby? How is he feeling?
I didn't have a chance to give Jay an answer. Instead, my attention was drawn to a woman who'd stepped out from the back of my building and onto the walkway, her arms draped loosely by her sides. I barely recognized her, and when I did, my brain stuttered to a standstill, refusing to accept the reality of the skeletal woman shuffling across the cement walk. Defibrillating my mind, I choked past the lump in my throat. I squeaked.
Sheila?
The last time I'd seen Ben's wife, Sheila, had been the day of Rick's memorial. A hastily thrown-together affair attended by a few of his friends and my family. When I'd called her to tell her about the service, she'd responded with such a dull voice I'd wondered if she'd even heard me. I would have preferred the brain-dead zombie who answered the phone to the harpy who'd arrived at the chapel. She'd cornered me in the vestibule, told me she never wanted to see me again, and she'd be damned if I ever came near her kids. That was the last I'd seen of her, and even then she'd taken an emotional beating she probably couldn't recover from. It had been the final blow for me, and I'd walked out of the memorial, mourning not only the loss of my lover, but the disintegration of a family I'd thought of as my own. To see Sheila standing in front of me was a shock, but not as bone-chilling scary as what she'd become. Sheila was nearly unrecognizable, more like one of those shrunken apple dolls shaped to look like her. Red lesions mottled her sunken cheeks, and the blonde mane she'd once been so proud of hung in brittle hanks around her two thin shoulders. Even from a distance, she smelled rank, a sour, curdled odor with a hint of raw sewage. A soiled wife-beater hung on her skinny frame, but the thin fabric did nothing to hide the concave swoop of her chest or the slight bloat around her belly. The black of her teeth stank of meth use. Even without seeing their rotting, crumbling edges, the lesions were as good a sign of meth addict as any. Her parched, cracked skin flaked off in a dusty storm when Sheila raised her arms and leveled a wicked-looking Glock at us. It was nearly too heavy for her, and I recognized it as Ben's personal piece. I'd given it to him for Christmas once, and we'd spent time on the range testing it out, turning up very late for dinner that night. I moved forward to grab at Jay, but Sheila warned me off with a wave of her weapon. When she spoke, her lips cracked further, and I could see the black rot eating away at her teeth. Holding up my hands, I slid closer to my lover, and Sheila let a shot bark out, shattering the living room window. The shot-up glass blew out everywhere, pelting Jay and I with tiny, sharp pebbles. The gun jerked in Sheila's hand, nearly slapping her in the face, but she brought it back down quickly, its sight finding me again.
"Hey, come on, Sheila, you've got friends here."
I was going to try talking. Hell, I'd try sucking the gun off if it would make her feel better, but Ben's wife had other plans.
"What's going on, uh-huh? Do you need some help?" "I took my kids' call."
Her tongue slithered around her mouth as she spoke, unfettered by her lack of front teeth.
"You know that? Did your friends, the cops, tell you that?"
"Ko-uh," Jay began to speak, but I shushed him, wanting to keep Sheila's attention on me. He was still caught up in the savagery his mother had inflicted on him, and I could hear him try to catch his breath behind me. "Sheila, honey, we can get someone to help you get them back, okay?" I nudged closer, trying to get closer to Jay. Seeing her strung out and wild-eyed, I didn't have any doubts the kids had been taken from her. She looked barely stable enough to be outside of a loony bin.
"Why don't you tell me what happened?" "What happened?" she screamed. "They took my kids! My parents took my kids! I've got nothing now, you fucking faggot! Nothing! No one!"
"Sheila,
don't say another goddamn thing!"
She was in full scream mode, and I took the chance to edge up against Jay's side.
Is this who you're fucking now? Does he know what a damn slut you are? You weren't happy with that faggot asshole you were living with? You had to go and fuck Ben too? You probably got him sick, and that's why he killed himself, because you gave him some faggot disease he couldn't live with.
Honey, Ben never, ever looked at me like that. I patted at the air, hoping the motion would calm her. He didn't like men. Not like that. He loved you. Things were just too hard for him.
You think he loved me? And why the fuck did he leave me? What the hell was so damn hard that he killed himself, huh?
More spittle flew from her mouth and a speck hit my face. I can help, honey, I soothed. I was searching my brain for a way to get Jay out of there, but short of throwing him through the broken window, I was coming up empty. Just tell me why you're here. What can I do for you?
You know what I'm gonna do, Cole? I'm gonna do to you what you fucking did to me. You took Ben. You took my kids. Rick was fucking nothing. You want to know how I feel? This is how I fucking feel.
And that's when she lifted the gun up again and blew a hole right through Jay's chest. Epilogue. When I'd been under, consciousness slid up around me with an undulating lucidity. Once, when I was floating on a river of painkillers, I listened to the whistles and beeps serenading me and wondered who was playing Pac-Man over my dead body. The machines wheezed and beeped and moaned, blipping out squeals in rhythm usually found only in video games or bad porno. Sitting with Jaemin in the hospital room, I was again being sung to by the bells and whistles, and not for the first time I wondered who was in charge of the controller and when he would stop fucking with the man hooked up to the machines. A shadow passed behind me. One of the nurses or orderlies tending to Jay, but I didn't really see them. The only thing I saw was the man laying too still under the bleach-scented white hospital sheets. Over the past few days, the hospital staff had tried to move me from the room. I wasn't having any of their shit. I followed Jay from ICU to the private room they'd finally put him in, keeping an eye on him, keeping my heart going with every beat of his. There'd been an argument about letting me stay with him, a lot of swearing on my part, and then some negotiating done by Mike and Scarlett's Hyung, convinced someone Jay and I were domestic partners. Either way, I wasn't moving. While everyone, including Ichiro, took turns sitting beside me, Scarlett kept me company most of the time. She and Tiffany were my constant shadows, while Maddie and Claudia provided a backup chorus for their nagging, sometimes even ganging up on me to take a shower or eat. His mother never came. I called. God fucking knows I called. I fucking begged into her voicemail, promising her everything, anything, just so she'd come to her son's side. Nothing. Scarlett told me to give up, that the woman wasn't worth it, and plied me with so much coffee I was beginning to wonder if I was fucking Tantalus. Still, hot and bitter coffee was good. The hospital food, not so much. He woke up, sporadically, at first fighting the tube they'd shoved down his throat, then battling the nurse when they took it out, and held his hand, trying to soothe his fears, but Jay was too far gone. Too far in the black to hear me. I wasn't even certain he knew who I was when he woke up the next time, his unfocused brown eyes trying to track my face when I leaned in to talk to him. He might have heard me say three words, and then he went under again. His face was wet with tears when I came in, and the deep brown eyes I loved to stare down into were caught someplace off in the distance, staring at something outside of the window. It wasn't much of a view, mainly the ass end of the building next door, but something in the reflective windows called to him. I pulled the chair closer to his bed and picked up his hand before I sat down and held his cold fingers tightly.
Babe? I got no response, so I tried again. Jay?
You're too far away. I need to feel you next to me.
I was going to catch hell for what I did next, but fuck the rules. Working down the bedguard, I slid in behind Jay, tilting him slightly forward so he could rest against me. Other than a wince when his stitches were pinched, he said nothing. But the shuddering sigh of relief was all I needed. Cradled in my embrace, he snuggled back, his breath snagging on his pain until he was comfortable. I was mindful of the drainage tube they had placed on his right side, keeping it as tangle-free as I could.
I am so stoned. No wonder you get shot a lot.
His tongue sounded like it was two sizes too big for his mouth, and a silly grin played hide-and-seek with me.
How's Nico? Where's Tiffany?
Trust you to ask about the cat, then your sister, I laughed, rubbing at his stomach. Tiff's staying at Mike's house. I think Maddie likes having a full-size doll to dress up. From what I hear, they're buying up L.A. Ichi's at our house. He's Nico's favorite person right now. He cooks her an egg every morning.
How bad was I hurt?
Not too bad. I grinned back at him when he gave me a sour look. No, really, on the scale of zero to cold, you barely registered. She hit your lung. But other than that, you're doing okay. They just wanted to keep you under for a few days.
Fuckers.
It was odd to hear him swear. Most of the time he rolled with everything, but for that one second it seemed like I was rubbing off on him. Which was a good thing, considering how much time I spent rubbing against him.
Did they catch her?
No, hon, they didn't. I didn't. I kissed the back of his head, grateful Scarlet had bought waterless shampoo for his hair. They will. I am not going to let this go. I could have said more. I could have told him how I didn't give a shit about where she had run off to after she'd shot him, or how I didn't chase after her, choosing instead to hold my hands over his wound to keep the blood in his body. After sitting in the ER with Jay's blood all over my hands, I chewed through every cop's ass I saw, until Wong was hailing down a doctor to tank me with sedatives. My own wounds hurt, scarred over reminders of the last Pennelly who'd fucked with me and my own. Ben took the coward's way out. He took himself out before I could get a hold of his fucking life-destroying ass, and I'd feel cheated if I found out Sheila danced off to her karmic destiny without me helping her get there.
Let the cops find her, Koa.
He tightened his arms around mine, and one of his elbows thrust sharp tingles through the bandaged knife wound along my ribs.
Remember when you promised you'd never let me go? Now is good. I need you here. Now.
Hey, I'm here, aren't I? I've even eaten the shitty jello they put on your plate so you don't have to, I reminded him. I'm not going anywhere, Kim Jae-min.
Agi?
The time spent drugged out of his mind had taken a toll on his face. His skin was drawn tight across his cheekbones, and he'd lost some weight, sharpening his features until they were nearly vulpine.
In case it was lost in all of this, I love you, Zagya.
It was fantastic to hear. Despite the R2-D2 orchestra playing the salsa behind us, those were words I needed to hear, wanted to hear. Even sweeter was the kiss he gave me, a slow brush of his mouth, the chap of his skin rough on my chin.
I love you too,
I whispered into his mouth. But no more getting shot. I don't think I can take it.
This is Greg Tremblay. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Dirty Laundry, Book 3 of the Cole McGinnis Mystery Series. The text is copyright 2013 by Reese Ford, production copyright 2014 by Dreamspinner Press. The book, Dirty Laundry, is available in print and electronic editions from dreamspinnerpress.com and from the Amazon Marketplace. Look for the continuation of the Cole McGinnis mystery series in Book 4, Dirty Deeds, available now in print. Sheila Pinelli needs to be taken out. Former cop turned private investigator Cole McGinnis never considered committing murder. But 6 months ago, when J. Min's blood filled his hands and death came knocking at his lover's door, killing Sheila Pinelli became a definite possibility. While Sheila lurks in some hidden corner of Los Angeles, J. and Cole share a bed, a home, and most of all happiness. They'd survived Jay's traditional Korean family disowning him, and plan on building a new life, preferably one without the threat of Sheila's return hanging over them. Thanks to the Santa Monica police mistakenly releasing Sheila following a loitering arrest, Cole finally gets a lead on Sheila's whereabouts. That is, until the trail goes crazy and he's thrown into a tangle of drugs, exotic women, and more death. Regardless of the case going sideways, Cole is determined to find the woman he once loved as a sister and get her out of their lives once and for all.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.